Imagine you're trying to build a modern, faster-than-light spaceship.
Okay.
But the only tools you are legally allowed to use are a stone hammer and a chisel.
Right, that wouldn't go very well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You would probably look at the blueprints, look at your stone hammer, and argue that the rules themselves are fundamentally broken.
Yeah, you'd have to.
And I know it sounds ridiculous, but right now, at the absolute cutting edge of artificial intelligence, computers are basically being forced to do exactly that. They are solving immensely complex physical systems using mathematical tools that were, largely locked in place during the 1800s.
It really is wild when you think about it. The constraints we place on our computational models today, they're entirely historical. We treat these old rules as if they are the unbreakable laws of physics,
Right.
when in reality, they're literally just the tools that made sense to human mathematicians a century and a half ago.
And that tension is exactly why we are here today. Welcome to a brand new deep dive where you and I are going to fundamentally rethink how we solve mathematical problems.
It's a huge topic.
It is. We are going to focus entirely on how new functions are created to solve mathematical problems more elegantly. Like, we are looking at a complete paradigm shift from treating math as this fixed, rigid fossil into a self-expanding, customizable language.
Yeah, and to explore this, we're unpacking a truly fascinating framework document today. It's authored by Per Lindholm, working in direct collaboration with an advanced AI model known as MiniMax M2.7.
Which is just so cool in itself.
Totally. And the publication date on this document is exactly today, May 7, 2026. What they are proposing here is a complete ground-up overhaul of how we define elementary mathematics.
Before we jump right into, creating new math out of thin air, we really need to understand why the current system is so stubbornly stuck in the past.
Right, we have to look at the history.
Exactly. To do that, let's look at the concept of mathematical kernels and their natural partners. If you recall from your calculus days, you can think of a kernel as the core fundamental operation.
Yeah, it's like a structural foundation. Historically, mathematicians discovered that these foundational kernels have natural pairs. Specifically, they're antiderivatives.
Okay, so like a matching set.
Right. If your kernel is a simple variable raised to a power, like x to the power of n, its natural partner is a power integral. If your core structure is a trigonometric wave, like cosine of x, it pairs beautifully with sine of x.
Right, they mirror each other structurally.
Exactly. They fit together perfectly. And in the traditional mathematical toolbox, these natural pairs are celebrated as elementary functions.
They are the reliable wrenches and screwdrivers of the math
Yes,
world.
exactly.
But the framework points out this glaring, just universe-sized exception to this neat system of natural pairings. And it involves arguably one of the most critical functions in all of science, which is the Gaussian function, usually written as e to the negative x squared.
The Gaussian function is literally ubiquitous. I mean, if you are modeling probability or quantum mechanics, fluid dynamics, or honestly just looking at a standard bell curve of test scores, you are using the Gaussian kernel. It's everywhere.
It is. And structurally, it looks incredibly straightforward. It sits right alongside standard elementary functions.
But the moment you try to find its natural pair, like the moment you actually try to integrate that bell curve, the entire discipline of mathematics just throws its hands up.
Yeah, the standard toolbox suddenly doesn't work at all.
Right. The integral of the Gaussian function is banished from the elementary club entirely, and it's arbitrarily labeled as a special or a non-elementary function.
And we really have to ask why this incredibly important function is treated like an outcast. Because the answer is not that the universe demands it. The answer is because of a concept known as Liouville's proof.
Ah, yes, the 1830s.
Right. In the 1830s, Joseph Liouville established this strict mathematical boundary. He proved that an elementary function must be capable of being expressed using a finite, limited number of basic algebraic operations.
So things like addition, multiplication, taking roots, standard exponentials.
Okay, so a finite number of steps, basically operations a 19th century mathematician could realistically write out on a chalkboard without, spending the rest of their natural life doing it.
That is the core of it, yeah. The problem is that finding the exact integral of the Gaussian function using those basic chalkboard operations requires expanding it into an infinite series, like a Taylor series.
This goes on forever.
Right. Because it requires an infinite string of additions to be perfectly accurate, it explicitly violates Liouville's rule of finite steps. Therefore, it was officially declared non-elementary.
Wow.
So today, when engineers need to work with it, they actually have to rely on really clunky approximations. They use things like the error function or erf of x, which is just loaded with arbitrary scaling factors, just to make the math roughly work out.
It really is like forcing a modern quantum computer to run an operating system like MS-DOS.
That's a perfect way to put it.
When an engineer asks, well, why are we using these messy approximations instead of a clean, native command? The only answer the math community gives is, well, because those were the rules of the operating system when Joseph Liouville built it 200 years ago.
It's a massive historical trap.
It really is.
And the authors of our source document are calling out that exact trap. They propose a radical philosophical shift for mathematics. Instead of asking, what can we prove is elementary based on the arbitrary constraints of a 19th century chalkboard?
Right.
We should be asking, what must be elementary to achieve perfect mathematical elegance?
Elegance. I love that word, but it sounds so subjective, right? Like art critique.
Mm-hmm.
But the document actually formalizes it into a hard mathematical equation.
Yeah.
They introduce the elegance metric.
Yeah. The elegance metric, denoted by a script E, is defined as structural coherence divided by computational cost.
Okay. Let's break that down for the listener. If I'm an AI evaluating an equation, what does that metric actually look like in practice?
Sure. So structural coherence measures how naturally a function mirrors its inverse without leaving messy, dangling variables or requiring manual workarounds.
Like it just fits smoothly.
Exactly. A high coherence means the geometry of the math aligns perfectly. Computational cost is exactly what it sounds like. It's how many processing cycles or how much memory an AI or a computer has to burn through to calculate an answer.
Got it.
So approximating the Gaussian integral with an infinite Taylor series has a very high computational cost and a very low structural coherence.
Because it's infinite and messy.
Right. It is inherently inelegant.
So to maximize that elegance metric for the Gaussian kernel, the authors proposed bypassing Liouville entirely. They proposed defining a brand new native elementary function called g of x,
which stands for the quadratic Gaussian integral.
Right.
Rather than trying to approximate the area under the bell curve using 1,000 tiny rectangles or leaning on the clunky error function, we simply define g of x as the structural perfect complement to e to the negative x squared.
So we are literally upgrading the operating system.
We are. We make the mathematics fit the underlying structure of reality rather than forcing the structure to fit historical rules.
Like you invent a tool specifically designed to grip that unique bolt rather than trying to use a pair of generic pliers and just stripping the metal.
Yes, exactly.
But if we can redefine something as fundamental as the Gaussian integral just by prioritizing elegance, how does this custom function approach solve the everyday algebraic nightmares that plague students and software alike?
Well, the document brings this concept down to a very relatable level. It examines a classic algebraic method, which is completing the square. And the text notes this specifically from Lindholm's original prompt as quadrat completering.
Ah, right. I think anyone who took algebra remembers completing the square. It works beautifully when you have a pure quadratic equation.
Yeah.
Like x squared plus bx plus c.
Right. It works beautifully there because all of those terms exist in the exact same mathematical type space. They are all polynomials. You are essentially just rearranging furniture within the exact same room to make the layout cleaner.
But the method completely falls apart the second you introduce what the source calls mixed expressions.
Oh, absolutely.
Like if you encounter an equation like x squared plus e to the x equals zero, traditional algebra just hits a brick wall.
The wall is hit because you have a polynomial term, the x squared, violently mashed together with an exponential term, the e to the x, or consider another one, x squared plus sine of x equals zero.
Which is a polynomial mixed with a trigonometric function.
Exactly.
It creates this massive type mismatch. It's like you're trying to build a perfectly symmetrical toy house, but half of your building materials are Lego bricks and the other half are Lincoln logs.
Huh, that's a great analogy.
Right, like they both work perfectly well in their own respective sets, but fundamentally, you cannot snap a plastic Lego stud into a round wooden Lincoln log notch. The standard tools offer no way to bridge that physical gap.
And that type gap is exactly why algebraic rearrangement fails. You just cannot jump between those two different mathematical dimensions with standard addition and multiplication. But returning to your analogy, if you recognize that Legos and Lincoln logs cannot connect natively, the elegant solution isn't to just smash them together with a hammer.
Right, that breaks the toys.
Exactly. The solution is to fire up a 3D printer and design a highly specific adapter. A piece that has a Lego connection on one surface and a Lincoln log groove on the other.
And the document actually has a name for these theoretical 3D printed mathematical adapters. They call them cross-type completers.
Yes. The objective here is to define an entirely new function space that natively bridges these gaps. So for the polynomial and exponential mismatch we mentioned earlier, the x squared plus e to the x problem, the AI proposes a quadratic exponential completer.
Or a QEC.
Right.
And for x squared plus sine of x, it logically calls for a quadratic trig completer. A QTC.
Mm-hmm.
There is even a scenario in the text dealing with products, like x times e to the x equals a constant. To even begin solving that, you traditionally have to take the logarithms of both sides to turn the multiplication into addition.
Right, which leaves you with x plus the natural log of x.
Which simply creates a brand new mixed type. You traded one problem for another, and now you have a linear term mixed with a logarithmic term.
Exactly. So to bridge that specific gap, the framework proposes a linear log adjuster, or an LLA.
Right.
But we need to explain how these completers actually work under the hood. If I am an AI, how does a QEC actually force a polynomial and an exponential to play nice?
Yeah. How does that work structurally?
It does it by elevating the geometry. So imagine that standard polynomial existing on a flat two-dimensional grid and the exponential curve swooping through it. The QEC doesn't try to force the exponential curve to act like a parabola on that flat paper.
Okay.
Instead, it defines a new mathematical manifold, a higher dimensional curved space. In this new space, the intersection of those two distinct messy shapes becomes a straightforward line. The adapter resolves the type mismatch algebraically by moving the entire equation into a geometry where both types share a common language.
I have to pause here because I can practically hear you, the listener, raising an eyebrow at this.
Oh, I'm sure.
There is a massive skeptical pushback to this entire philosophy because isn't defining a brand new, highly specific function just to solve a stubborn equation essentially cheating?
It definitely sounds like it at first.
Right. If I can't solve a riddle and I just invent a new word that means the answer to the riddle, that feels like a mathematical cop-out. It feels like a tautology.
It is a totally rational reaction to view this as cheating, especially when we are trained from childhood to view math as this closed system of absolute laws.
Yeah.
But the document anticipates this exact pushback. It argues that this is not cheating. It is actually the fundamental process of mathematical discovery.
How so?
We are defining the inverse of mixed functions as new elementary tools. Hmm. Consider the history of how human math evolved. Subtraction wasn't handed down by the universe on a tablet.
Right.
It was deliberately invented to be the inverse of addition. Wow. The square root was defined purely as the inverse of squaring a number.
That's a really good point. I mean, there was a point in history where solving for the square root of -1 was considered impossible. It was a broken puzzle because no real number multiplied by itself equals a negative.
Exactly. And mathematicians didn't just give up. They defined an entirely new concept, the imaginary number I, to serve as the adapter for that specific gap.
Wow, yeah.
Was defining it a cop-out? No, it unlocked entirely new fields of quantum mechanics, electrical engineering, fluid dynamics. By defining a completer, which the text formalizes as script C sub F comma G, to represent bringing functions F and G into a complete form, we are actively ensuring that every structural kernel has a native mathematical complement.
Which circles right back to our core focus today. We are focusing on how new functions are created to solve mathematical problems more elegantly. We are identifying the structural gaps in our language and deliberately inventing the vocabulary to fill them.
The logic is identical to defining the key of X to complement the Gaussian curve. It is about architectural symmetry, not cheating.
Okay, assuming we accept that this is a valid upgrade to our mathematical toolkit, we run into a massive logistical wall.
Which is?
Well, if the goal is to design a custom, highly specific elementary function, every single time we hit a type gap, a QEC here, an LLA there, who is actually doing this work, human mathematicians cannot sit in a lab, manually invent, verify, and publish a new structural function for every mixed equation a physics simulation spits out.
Oh, a human absolutely cannot. The sheer volume and complexity of mixed expressions in advanced modeling would take lifetimes to map manually.
So who did it?
The answer to who will be doing this on the fly lies in the second half of the framework, and that is the integration of artificial intelligence.
Ah, Which brings us back to the co-author of the document, Minimax M2.7.
Exactly. The text introduces a concept called conditional collapse theory, or CCT, alongside a variation for differential equations called ODE-CCT.
Sure.
What this theory does is radically redefine what understanding actually means for an AI system.
How does it redefine it? Because we usually just think of AI as a very, very fast calculator.
Right. But in conditional collapse theory, understanding is defined mathematically as expansion across probability tokens. When an AI looks at a complex physics problem, it doesn't just see a single equation. It sees a massive state space, a sprawling cloud of uncertainty.
Like a fog of possible answers.
Exactly. Each probability token represents a potential state or answer within that system. The AI's objective is to collapse that entropy, that uncertainty, as efficiently as possible to arrive at the single correct state.
It's essentially playing an incredibly high-stakes game of 20 questions with the math problem.
Yes.
The goal is to ask the most high-value, structurally coherent questions first, so it can narrow down that massive cloud of possibilities in the fewest number of steps.
That is a brilliant way to visualize it. And what the framework reveals is that the shape of this process is not random. The document details the Gaussian collapse profile.
Okay, what is that?
When an AI uses CCT to navigate a problem, the optimal sequence of uncertainty collapse where the earliest steps eliminate the absolute most entropy follows the exact mathematical curve of e to the negative x squared. It follows the Gaussian kernel.
Wait, are you saying the actual shape of how a neural network thinks and collapses uncertainty mirrors the physical shape of the bell curve we've been talking about this whole time?
It mirrors it flawlessly.
Yeah.
And this unlocks the most profound connection in the entire framework, that new custom function we explored earlier, the key of x.
Yeah.
Because it is the perfect structural complement to the Gaussian curve, key of X is literally the mathematical trajectory of how an AI organically understands Gaussian structured problems.
That is insane.
Right. By defining it as a native elementary function, we are giving the AI the exact native vocabulary it needs to operate at maximum efficiency. We stop forcing the AI to translate its thoughts into Louville's clunky 19th century approximations.
It's giving the AI a native language instead of forcing it to speak through a broken translator.
Exactly.
So if we extrapolate this out, what does the implementation roadmap actually look like for a future AI mathematical solver? How does it execute this in real time?
The framework lays out a continuous 5-step implementation cycle for future systems. Step one, the AI ingests a complex real-world problem, perhaps a chaotic mixed expression from a climate simulation.
Okay.
Step two, it analyzes the equation to identify the core kernel, parsing what fundamental operations are interacting.
So it maps out whether it's looking at Legos, Lincoln Logs, or something else entirely.
Precisely. Step three is consulting its global registry. It checks the existing table of mathematical tools for a natural structural complement. It looks for a pre-existing adapter.
And if it finds one, it just solves it.
Yes. If it finds one, it solves the problem. But step four is where the paradigm entirely shifts. If no natural complement exists, if there is a completely novel type gap, the AI does not fall back on messy, computationally expensive approximations.
Right.
Using the elegance metric, it dynamically defines a new structural complement on the fly. It invents the custom cross-type function right then and there.
It literally writes the math to solve the problem simultaneously.
It does.
And I assume step five is returning the answer.
It returns the incredibly elegant, exact solution to the user. But crucially, step five also involves updating the global mathematical table. The AI takes that newly invented function, proving its structural coherence and low computational cost, and adds it to the elementary set. The toolkit permanently expands.
Man, it treats mathematics like a massive, interconnected, open-source software project that just patches and updates its own language the moment it encounters a bug or a gap. It automates mathematical elegance.
It creates a living math. Future systems won't struggle with the limitations of historical algebra. They will organically grow the language of mathematics to natively, perfectly fit whatever chaotic, mixed-type problem you present to them.
If we step back and look at the sheer scale of what we are discussing, it is a monumental transition in human thought.
It really is.
We are moving from treating math as an untouchable, rigid fossil handed down by figures like Louville, to treating it as an adaptable dynamic design framework.
Yeah.
A framework where maximizing structural coherence and elegance is the absolute driving force.
We transition from viewing mathematics as a landscape we merely explore to an architecture we actively designed to map perfectly onto the complexity of reality.
Which leaves us with a truly mind-bending implication to mull over as we wrap up. We began this deep dive by comparing traditional math to an ancient rigid building where you couldn't change the rules.
Right.
Now, we're looking at a near future where AI systems are dynamically inventing and expanding custom cross-type elementary functions in fractions of a second. They will be generating perfectly elegant mathematical structures that human beings never even conceptualized.
They will be expanding the language of reality at the speed of computation.
So the question you have to ask yourself is, how long until the raw language of mathematics evolves into something we can no longer intuitively read? How long until the building of math is constructed from architectural geometries so perfectly elegant and so deeply alien that human minds cannot even comprehend the blueprints? We won't be able to read the math. We will only be able to stand back and marvel at the flawlessly elegant results it produces.
An ultimate language of reality, designed purely for elegance, but spoken natively only by the machines.
It completely reframes our place in the universe. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive to rethink the very numbers and functions that build our world. Keep questioning the rules, and we will catch you next time.